I've told you a lot about AquariusHomeServices.com, whether your local authorized dealer for Kinetico water treatment systems. About a month ago, Brian came to my house from Aquarius Home Services and did a free water analysis on my city water, and it was absolutely disgusting. He did this Lipton tea test where he took purified water and then he took my city water. He made tea in my microwave. One came out pitch black and smelled disgusting. The other one came out, well, smelling and looking like tea. And it just was absolutely awesome. And that's what sold me. I got a Kinetico revolutionary non-electric water treatment system, AquariusHomeServices.com or 1-888-741-9025. Again, Aquarius Home Services. They're your local authorized dealer for Kinetico water treatment systems.
I want to offer a sincere thank you to the Minnesota Twins for providing us what we in the business call content every week. Every week, I'm wondering, what are Roy and I going to talk about this week? And then the Twins make a move. It's been pretty fascinating. As I mentioned in my column that ran on Friday, I thought about this time last year, the Twins had built probably the best and deepest roster maybe in franchise history, and they might even be better right now. But let's get the expert opinion on that. This is Roy Smalley's Chin Music. Roy Smalley, of course, the former Twin All-Star and current FSN announcer. This is part of TalkNorth.com. Follow us on Twitter at TalkNorthPod to see all the shows as they're released. Thank you to Aquarius Home Services, Minnesota Propane Association, and Kowalski's. Thanks to our producer, Brandon Morton. So, Roy, before we get into detail on these moves and a couple of other big topics I want to get to, just tell me what you think of the team that the Twins have currently assembled.
In a word, I guess, or three words, I like it. I think that everything depends on their young players continuing to get better and better as they continue to try to get to the potential that I think we all, and especially the Twins, think that they have. But in the meantime, I mean, if that continues, then I think it's a very solid ball club. I think it's potentially terrific offensively once again. I think they've helped themselves immeasurably in the pitching staff, starters through relievers, starting last winter and continuing this winter. So I got to say that I think it's a very, very solid club.
And we'll get more into the bullpen here in a little bit, but let's get to the current events. They do re-sign Nelson Cruz for 1 year, $13 million deal. And this is one of those many deals that takes forever to come together, and then it ends up being exactly what we all thought it probably should have been anyway. You know, but they had to play the game, and their agents had to do what agents do. So Cruz is back. We've already talked about the addition of Simmons and what that adds both in terms of value and entertainment. Then they go out and get Colome, who you and I talked about it right as soon as Liam Hendricks signed with the White Sox. I mean, I immediately thought Colome would be a good fit for the Twins. So they're adding another good back of the bullpen arm in Colome. They also trade Lamont Wade Jr. for Sean Anderson, another talented arm. This, you know, Anderson really hasn't proved himself at the big league level yet, but he does have good stuff. What is your view of the bullpen right now and Colome specifically? Because the interesting thing about Colome is he's gone from being, over the years, from being kind of a pure power pitcher to being more of a guy who gets you out with a cutter. And I'm asking you about 85 different questions here. Does the fact that he's relying on a cutter, is that any kind of a red flag, or is that him just finding a good pitch?
I think he's found a good pitch. As I watched him last year, I was impressed with his ability to be a closer. And there's obviously something that the White Sox see that where they look at Liam Hendricks and say, way better. That gets us a better closer. And that may be the case. But guys that can close, I mean, it doesn't matter to me so much where you are in the various levels of elite closer, right? If Liam Hendricks is better than Colome, that's fine. Colome is better than what the Twins have as a someone that has been a closer, proven he can do it in his stomach, and proven he can do it through trouble, you know, allowing guys to get on and then get out of it. Those, I mean, I think he's got the inner makeup to do that, and I think he's got the stuff to do it. Is it the best closer stuff in baseball? Nah, probably not. But have the Twins help themselves on the back end? You know, we've talked about this a lot over the years here, but it's because it's true. Whenever you add a quality arm at the back end of the at a quality stomach at the back end of the bullpen, then it focuses roles. It really defines everybody else's role in the bullpen and puts it and gives Wes Johnson and Rocco Baldelli an opportunity to find the best spots, the very best roles for everybody else, and gives them more arms earlier in the relief picture, right, in the sixth inning, when you've got three guys that can pitch the eighth and ninth, then all of a sudden the finishing off the sixth and pitching the seventh, you know, gets a little bit more defined, a little bit easier. So I think it's a really good move. We did talk about it 2 weeks ago on the show. I think it was when Liam Hendricks signed, and you and I both said, yeah, go get Colome if you can make a reasonable deal. That's the last part of it. I think they've made a reasonable deal there, both with Colome and with Nelson Cruz.
So I think the Cruz move was kind of predestined and logical and you know, kind of endearing and all that. It's great. It'll be great to have him back. The bullpen to me is fascinating because I think, you know, I always go back to conversations I used to have with Terry Ryan every winter about him putting together a bullpen. Sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. And he would always tell me that one of his philosophies was you have to be really careful about a good major league reliever coming off a great year. Now, that sounds contradictory, right? Why wouldn't you want the guy coming off a great year? Well, he would always say if a reliever has a great year, he's going to get overused, and he's probably going to get up to warm a lot of times where he's not actually put in the game. If somebody who's talented has a down year, that probably means that they didn't get abused and they might be a candidate for a bounce back season. So even though I like the moves that the Twins have made to build this bullpen, I also consider it, you know, just a roll of the dice, you know, which of these guys will perform and which won't.
It really is for sure. And you never really know until, you know, a closer has been, you know, season game in, game out, season in, season out for 3 years. You can never say, boy, that guy is the elite answer. So you don't really know. In today's game, I think all you can really do is I think Colin May is a great example. The guy knows how to pitch. He knows what he's trying to do. He has the guts to do it, and he still has the stuff to do it. Now, we don't know exactly how good that's going to be, but it's a good option starting the season as your closer. And we'll see how Liam Hendricks does in Chicago. I suspect it will be good, but I also think that the Duffy, Rogers, Colome at the end of the game is pretty good as well.
And what do you think of Robles? Do you think he's somebody who could be a back end guy, or is he more of a middle reliever?
That's one of the wild cards that I'm really interested in. And this guy's got a really good arm, and he had some injury trouble, and then was not as effective. He had one pretty good year, I think. People thought he was going to be a star, and then you know, injuries and lack of performance kind of set in. This could be one of those, a guy just needs a change of scenery. We've seen that a lot of times. And as I said, when they first got him, it's kind of a no-brainer. Let's take this arm and see what happens. It may be that he's just kind of lost it in his ability to locate, or his ability to have a second and or third pitch over, or you know, whatever it is. But it's such an inexpensive, no risk way to run a really good arm out there. And the other thing the Twins have done is um, it, they're they're getting they've gotten some younger guys, some guys, some older guys like Tyler Clippard, no longer, but younger guys with good arms, like Robes, like Sean Anderson.
Yep.
I was watching video of him pitch. He's a big, strong kid and has good stuff. And so it'll be interesting to see why he hasn't reached his stuff potential yet. His potential that the stuff would seem to indicate. So I think they've got some very nice options, some of which could turn out to be, kind of eye-opening.
I want to get to Randy Dobnik, Lamont Wade, that trade, and Casey Fien here in a second. First, I want to thank all of our listeners, all of our sponsors at TalkNorth.com. Thank you very much. You've been invaluable as we've grown the network. If you'd like to advertise, you know anybody who wants to advertise with our show or our network, you can reach out to Karen Cleary at KCLEARY at TalkNorth.com. Thanks to our producer, Brandon Morton. Reminder, the John Krasinski Show right now is running a special on Manscaped.com. If you want, it's just a great device. I love using it. Promo code is ATHLETIC for 20% off and free shipping. Also, I'd like to thank Aquarius Home Services. You heard their ad at the beginning of the show. And I'm looking forward to being able to get back on the deck and grill with my propane. Thanks to Minnesota Propane Association and Kowalski's. I know that among all the people on this network who enjoy Kowalski's, Anthony LaPanta probably keeps them in business himself.
Hey, it's Anthony LaPanta, play-by-play man for the Minnesota Wild and co-host of the Worst Seats in the House podcast. When we're not focused on hockey, I love to spend my free time in the kitchen. And before we prepare a great meal, I do my shopping at Kowalski's. Best in the Twin Cities when it comes to fresh meat. Awesome steaks. I love the Akiyushi steak line. It's as good as it gets. It's the best you'll get anywhere in the Twin Cities. I also love their fresh fish. It's unrivaled, the selection that they have. Also a great spot to get your fresh produce. It's worth the trip. Wherever you have to go to get yourself to a Kowalski's, you won't be disappointed by the quality of food that you acquire. And when it's time to have a great meal, you might as well start with the best raw products. So I do my shopping at Kowalski's. I recommend that you do too. It's Kowalski's, the joy of good food.
Hey, I'm Laura Shera, and did you know, according to the Environmental Protection Agency Energy Star program, that propane is almost 3 times more efficient than grid electricity? We all care about our planet, so let's use energy efficiently to reduce our environmental footprint. You can heat your homes, your water, your cabins, your businesses with propane. The right energy right now. Propane, clean American energy. For more information, go to propane.com.
So, Lamont Wade Jr., is he a guy you think can be an everyday major league player and just wasn't going to get the chance here? Or do you think he's more of a, kind of a bench player, I guess, for lack of a better phrase?
Yeah, it remains to be seen because he never obviously didn't get a chance to be anything other than the bench player. He's a nice luxury to have. He was a nice luxury for the Twins to have because he can run. He can play a lot of different positions, hit left-handed. So there's a lot to like about Lamont Wade. He's a great kid, and he's got talent to hit. There's no question about it. Whether or not he's an everyday outfielder in the big leagues, it remains to be seen, and he'll get a chance to prove that he is out there in San Francisco. But I really think the jury's out on Lamont Wade. I don't think he was a can't-miss everyday outfielder. For his sake, I hope I'm wrong about that. That's what it feels like to me.
So, and it feels like the Twins are pretty close to having the bullpen they want to start the season with. The rotation is intriguing because after adding Happ, they now have 4 veteran starters who've all been good. Odorizzi's still floating out there. There are a lot of veteran big names coming off bad years or injuries or still possibilities out there. Would you rather see a team like the Twins go get another veteran as your 5th starter, or would you rather see them give a shot to Randy Dobnik, who's been very good the last 2 regular seasons?
I think they like Randy Dobnik a lot. I think they like his what they saw from him in terms of potential. And we talked about him a little bit last week, I think, just what the problem that he ran into was one of command in the strike zone. And when he has that, he has the, his stuff in the strike zone is really good. What he gets in trouble when he's ball two, 3-1, ball two, you know, on in an inning. And so I think that they believe that that's not permanent, because they've seen it happen too many times when he is pounding the strike zone and guys really don't touch him, or they touch him, but very weakly, which brings to mind the other issue with Randy Dobnak that I saw last year. And that is, I would say that they touch him weakly because his fastball moves so much. It goes down and in, or straight in to right-handers, and so the opposite to left-handers, down and away. Both of those things very good. What we saw last year, it was right-hand hitters beating the ball into the ground. If they would just stay fair, he'd have thrown no hitters, but they beat the ball into the ground foul down the left field line. And the reason is the ball moves so much that they have to fight it off. They have to get the bat head out in front, and they inadvertently spoil a lot of really good pitches in terms of movement, and keep at bats going. And it's hard on it by hitting those balls foul. And it's not, I mean, you look at the stuff and how weakly they're hitting it and how they're fighting the stuff off from breaking their bats. And you say, man, this guy's got good stuff. But the problem is they'll hit five in a row where they're beating the ground down the left field line. And then, you know, and then the pitcher has to keep throwing it in there, right? And then a slider hangs or a fastball, you know, stays out over the plate or something. And then someone hits it. So it's going to be interesting to see if Dobnak can harness that movement into weakly hit balls fair instead of, you know, hitters prolonging at bats by fouling it off consistently until they get a pitch they can handle.
That's a fascinating look at the way, you know, the internal mechanisms of at bats and finishing hitters off. Does Dobnak need to develop a different pitch or a different approach, or, I mean, is there an easy solution to this?
Well, he's got to be able to get the same kind of movement on his fastball where it stays more middle down and middle of the plate, where it stays on the plate longer. So what's happening with those balls that right-handed hitters, you know, foul down the left field line, hit weak ground balls foul, is that the ball starts out kind of inside middle and just runs hard in at their hands. And so hitters, you know, they see the ball inside middle and they've got to swing at that. It's a strike, and a lot of guys want the ball in there. And so they start to swing and the ball just keeps running hard in their hands. And then they fight it off, and it, because the ball ends up actually inside. And so where Dobnak got in trouble, it was either the ball was being fouled down the left field line, or guys were so tied up they took it, and the ball moved so much it moved inside for, you know, for a ball. That's why I say, you know, ball two, you know, 3-1. You know, a lot of those happen simply because the movement was so good and hitters couldn't handle it, and so they took it. And fortunately for them, it was inside. So I'm thinking that the prescription for that is second and third pitches. He's got a reasonable slider. He's got a fairly good changeup, and I think he's got to be able to throw his fastball, you know, knee high, middle of the plate, if hitters don't swing at it, it stays in the strike zone. If they do swing at it, it's down, and that movement will get ground balls. If you remember Scott Erickson, it was very similar. Scott Erickson had the most devastating sinking fastball. He threw it hard, and the ball came up to the plate and just took a hard down and right turn. And he just gave up ground ball after ground ball after ground ball. And Dobnak has that kind of movement on his fastball, but he has got to be able to command that, you know, more on the outside corner and let it run back, you know, just below the knees on the middle of the plate, because he'll wear out Andrelton Simmons with that pitch. He'll get, you know, 1,000 ground balls a shortstop if he's able to do that. And running the ball in on guys is great because it sets up the slider on the outside part of the plate. It sets up change up because they have to be in such a hurry not to get their bat sawed off by that ball that's moving in. But just like anybody else, I mean, once you've got guys set up for something away, you have to be able to make a good pitch with it out there on the low outer part of the plate. It's not enough just to say, okay, here's a different pitch from the fastball. A different pitch doesn't matter. What matters is stuff and location. And so you've got somebody, you pounding them inside. They're worried about that hard sink, the hard moving fastball. Now they're really vulnerable to a second or third pitch, low and preferably an outside part of the plate, preferably. But you have to be able to throw it there when you need it. And then, you know, that if people just watch pitchers and how they work, it's always the effective guys are guys that can make a quality pitch when they have to get themselves back in the count. And Maeda is the absolute master of that. The reason he was so good was not just because his stuff is good and he had a great idea about how to play, you know, fastball against that great changeup and throw some cutters and, you know, mix things around. No, the hitters never knew what was coming. But I think even more importantly for him and for all the good pitchers demonstrate this. They get to 2-0 or they get to 2-1 where they really can't afford to go 3-1. And they don't just throw a fastball down the middle for a strike. They put something on a corner somewhere, whatever the pitch is, to get them back in the count so that now it's 2-2 or now it's 3-2 and they have a little bit more flexibility about what they're doing. The hitter becomes less aggressive at that point. And you know, that I think that will be the key thing for Dobnak is okay. When guys are, you know, when you've gotten to 2-0 or 2-1, guys are fouling the ball down the line. You can't seem to put them away. What can you throw to get yourself back in the count or to put somebody away so that you don't have to throw the ball down the middle? And that's the great separator for pitchers.
That's fascinating stuff. By the way, you brought up Scott Erickson. He's one of my favorite case studies of pitching success. Big, strong guy. Very athletic, excellent stuff, power sinker, had great success when he first came up to the big leagues, big key to the 91 World Championship team. And then, you know, as his career went on, he struggled to put people away. He, you know, from what people told me, sometimes he would get frustrated with, you know, situations or fielders. He would overthrow his sinker, which would straighten it out, which makes it more of a batting practice fastball instead of a great sinker. And I just can't tell you how many times, like at a spring training, I'd be watching him throw live batting practice and people are like, how does anybody ever get a hit off this guy? And then he would go into the season and he'd get hit and it just didn't seem possible.
You know, it's such a fine line for a sinker ball pitcher. Because, you know, putting people away is the whole key. And that's really what we're talking about here. We're talking about two things for pitchers. Being able to get back in the count when you have to with something that's not down the middle. And then being able to put somebody away when you have to, you know, when you have to do that. And when you've got them set up to put them away, can you throw a pitch? Do you have a pitch that will work? And can you throw it where you need to? A great example is Kyle Gibson. Twins fans will, you know, be familiar with the frustration there. And I, you know, in talking about, do you have a pitch that can put somebody away and can you throw it where you want to when you have to? And that breaking ball that Kyle Gibson developed was as good a put away pitch as there was. He went through a season or maybe two where he struck more people out with that pitch than anybody else that had a similar pitch, right? More people got swing and miss on his breaking ball than anybody else. The problem with Kyle Gibson, as Twins fans know and have been frustrated with, is that he would nibble around and couldn't always find fastball down or on a corner or that put away pitch when he had to have it. And then he'd let hitters get back in counts. And here would come, something down the middle and they'd get tattooed and game over, or at least start over for him. And that's really what we're talking about for pitchers is, do you have that? Do you have that pitch? And then can you throw it where you want to when you really need to do that? And that's that's the great separator.
Last topic for today. Once again, thanks to everyone who listens. Thanks to Aquarius Home Services, Minnesota Propane Association, and Kowalski's. Also, thanks to our producer, Brandon Morton. I wrote about it in the Friday paper. I was kind of looking over the roster, and I saw a tweet from Casey Fien, the former Twins reliever, basically decrying the fact that the Twins have signed, on their current roster, four players who were penalized for some form of performance-enhancing drugs or masking agents. And Pineda, Colome, Cruz, Polanco. And I just think that it's a difficult and complex subject, but you're a former player. And I know, of course, you have every reason to not be able to stand anybody who cuts a corner or finds an extra edge. So just where do you come down on how Major League Baseball or the Twins should handle players who have that in their past?
Let me start by saying I think guys are cheaters if they do that, right? I mean, I mm-hmm. can't stand it. I can't, and it makes me think in many cases it makes me think that if a guy's a cheater, then there's a personality flaw there. There's a character flaw there, and it bothers me about the guy. It bothers me for the game, and I think there's no place for it. And I think guys should be punished for it. Now is where it gets tough. I mean, what's the punishment? And then once the punishment is leveled, once it is doled out, then how are we supposed to feel about people? And my thought is the game, the league, the Major League Baseball decides on what the punishment is. And then if it's not expulsion from the game, then I believe in second chances too. I mean, the guys make mistakes. It's not always because it's a character flaw. Probably it may be a mental flaw. You're being a dumbass. I mean, don't do that. Right. I mean, I thought I was taking weight loss medication. Well, go find a doctor and show them the stuff and say, what does this word mean? What does this mean? This ingredient right here, is there anything there that would get me in trouble? Right? I mean, so they're either lying or they're a dumbass. And so fix that, don't do that. But if you have, and the punishment has been doled out, then if the punishment is not expulsion, then teams have the right to give guys a second chance. And now I personally believe, back to the character flaw issue, if you do it once and you're contrite and you're sorry and I'll never do it again for whatever reason, whether you were lying or whether you're a dumbass or whether you're a jerk, whatever the reason, don't do it again. And make sure, have them prove all the time that they're not doing it again. And then at that point, hey, great. You turned your baseball life around. You did what you did. And now you're sorry for it. You have never done it again. I'd have a hard time not giving somebody a second chance. But if they get the second chance and they do it again, I would be in favor of expulsion from the game. I mean, then we go back to either character flaw or, too much dumbass for the game. Can't abide that. It is can't abide. I mean, can't do it.
Yeah, no, well said. Well said. I love the realistic player view of this. And listen, I to be clear, I'm not hammering Casey Fien for having his opinion. I understand exactly where he's coming from. And I've had that conversation with so many players over the decades where they say, hey, you know, I was a AAA player, and if I had cheated, I might have been a big league player. Or I was a fringe big league player, and if I had cheated, I might have made $30 million more dollars. I absolutely understand where they're coming from, and they have every right to feel that way. It just, as you said, the harder question is what in the real world can you actually do about it? How do you handle it? And I think you're right. I think everybody should get a second chance, but I'm not sure everybody should get a third chance.
Exactly. Exactly right. And I don't blame Casey Fien. I mean, you think about right. The other thing to what you're saying about is what you're talking about is not just the guys that could have been better, but how about the guys that were, you know, fringe AAA to the big league pitchers or hitters? And there's fewer jobs available for those guys because the right. other guys were this kind of the same kind of guy they were, and they took their job, right? I mean, mm-hmm. Because they were better. So there's a lot of reasons for players to be very bitter about it. I don't begrudge Casey at all. But I think where I differ from Casey is, if you want to say to Major League Baseball, look, if these guys use, kick them out of the game, right? One time, you get no, there's no tolerance for it. They use one time, they're out. Okay, I would listen to that for sure. But once that's not the case, once Major League Baseball has determined punishment and second chance, I think it would be strange for a club to come out and say, just so all you fans or everybody knows, our policy is, if a guy's ever used or been suspected of use, we're not interested. I think that's a tougher deal.
Yeah, agreed. I appreciate the nuanced view of this very difficult issue. Thanks to everyone who listens. We do appreciate it. I think the Twins are going to continue to be very interesting. Probably next week we'll get a little more into what the division and the rest of the American League looks like. Again, follow us at Talk North Pod on Twitter. Find all the shows at talknorth.com. And wherever you listen, rate us, rip us, let us know how we're doing.